Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Live Line. 51551 is our text number. Let us not forget what age a lot of these children were when they were being abused in school. The people who were now in their 50s, 60s and 70s have been contacting us in their droves, in their hundreds in the last few weeks. This is a voice.
When I was born, I got this crown. There used to be jewels on the gems, glitter. They all fell off. I can't remember that. That was when I was a baby. But now I'm 18.
That's a voice today of a five-year-old. This is Angela telling us what she was made do when she was 1 year younger, 4 years in a school.
I was made to slap my brother across the face because he missed a spelling. The teacher dragged me out of my seat and up in front of the class. She took my hand and she made me repeatedly slap him across the face. He was desperately upset, but so was I. It was very humiliating. And to this day, I get flashbacks about it.
I remember we had a man on who, when he was 50 months old, 4 years and 2 months, he was savagely beaten. He soiled himself, such was the violence of the beating in the school, and he developed a stammer, a horrific stammer. He went mute for 3 months and developed a stammer. Before I go to Michael, John, Maureen, Dave, who are on the line, Andrew, Jim and the other callers, let's listen to calls we've been getting over the weekend.
I'm 45 now. I was physically abused by lay teachers in a religious ethos primary school. I was a bit hyper in class and looking for attention. I had one teacher who made me kneel down on a wooden floor on 2 50p pieces. I wasn't allowed to rest my body on my heels, but forced to remain upright. My full weight was on my knees on those 50p pieces. The whole day I had to do this. It wasn't just for a few minutes. The whole day, every day, for 6 weeks.
I was pulled by the ear to standing position on a lot of occasions. I was a very nervous child, so I used to bite my nails. If I was seen doing this, I was called to the top of the classroom and teacher would put Tippex thinner on all of my nails. Then he would say, "See what that tastes like," smiling. I was 10 years old.
Back in the late 50s, during writing time in class, I was suddenly given a severe whack in the back of the head because I was writing with my left hand. I was roared at and asked, "Why was I using the devil's hand?" I had no answer and a tear fell from my eye onto the paper and blotched the paper. This resulted in a worse crack across the head. So much for Christian Brothers. I'm 80 now and still remember it vividly. I am now ambidextrous because of this, but I find if I get stressed, I start writing with my left hand again.
My school, or Gulag in Galway, was a lay school. Nothing but fear, 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 brought on by slaps, beatings and shouting. I was uptight all day long. At Irish, there were 3 slaps for each father missed. I remember a day when a boy next to me received so many slaps that he could not hold his pen to write and then was slapped for that too. His knuckles were that swollen. Frequently the sound around us would remind you of little piglets being mistreated. There was so much punishment. I will never ever forget the moment that I saw excrement running down the left leg of a boy who was standing in front of me. We were wearing short trousers at that time. In the 4 years I attended that school, I learned very little, if anything. One's whole focus was on tactics to avoid the teacher's attention, such as keeping the head down and the like. There was so much punishment taking place, it was unbelievable. Those lads did not deserve this. No way.
My heart goes out to all those brave people who spoke with you. I would say my personality was changed by a nun. From the age of 5, I was subjected to daily beatings and humiliations by this nun. As a result, I refused to go on to the secondary school because I was afraid of nuns. I was only 12 and my parents didn't know what to do with me. I went on and the next important stage of my life was full of anger. I've spent a lot of years working out where the damage started and learning that it was not my fault. I have no forgiveness for the nun who tormented me. I got on well in life, but feel my path would have been different if it was not for her. I do not ever speak out loud about this, as I still feel the shame.
Michael, John, Maureen, Michael, good afternoon. You were working. Where were you working, Michael? Hello, Michael. You there, Michael, for me? I was in school. Here you are. I can hear you coming in, Michael. Good afternoon. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number. But Michael, good afternoon. Okay, John, are you there, John?
How you doing?
Okay, Kevin Moran, the great soccer player, he used to play Gaelic,
yeah.
Actually. He got you into trouble. What happened?
Well, I suppose it goes back to the second level, secondary school, where we all played sport. I was particularly, I thought it was good anyway, in national school, and then went to second Christian Brothers School in Dublin, and became kind of the captain, if you like.
Yeah.
And we had, in those days, inter-class games on a Wednesday.
Okay.
And which we all participated, and we went around and we played in different classes, different levels, 15. But after the GA, I would take some of the lads over to play soccer because I played for a soccer club as well. And I ran for the school in athletics, so it was very sports orientated. However, the so-called ban existed from the GAA and the Christian Brothers in schools.
That you couldn't play any other sports?
Any other sports other than GA.
Yeah.
Now, obviously in certain colleges in Dublin where you had rugby and soccer and you had hockey.
Yeah.
But in the Christian Brothers, you only had basically GA, and that was it. So it was a lot of damage done to a lot of people, but particularly myself, because the school were doing well, and they said, if you don't play soccer, you know, we won't teach you. So they avoided me for 4 months in school.
Sorry, if you don't play GAA, they won't teach you. You started
playing. Don't play GAA.
Okay.
So and play for the school, and I said no. Well, my mother then wrote a letter saying that he wasn't allowed to play after the school hours on the pitch, play soccer, that he wouldn't play for the school in the GA. Whatever route they took, all the teachers, particularly the Christian Brothers rather than the lay teachers, they decided to avoid me in class and just go down the line and just jump over me to the next person for 3 or 4 months until they got to the semi-final. 1 year, and they wrote a letter saying that, well, if he plays, if John plays in the thing, then that Asher will you know, reinstate him or something, you know. And I didn't play, and they lost anyway, as it happens. But subsequently, from that, then it transferred into all sorts of abuse by teachers that I was a kind of a traitor, I betrayed the school, I was a rebel, and unwelcome in class. So that's the kind of stuff. Now, this doesn't compare to anything that you've been dealing with there, Joe, in the last few weeks, but it's still a psychological damage that was done, not just to me, but I'm sure to other people in middle schools, over this thing called the ban, which was removed in 1971.
And that was in the 1970s, and...
It was the 60s when it occurred
okay,
to me,
Was there physical abuse, John?
There was, it was more or less as you were passing by them, they and one or two of the classmates as well, they felt that you were very defiant, and that you, I said that I have a choice to play or not, but they have also a choice to teach me. I mean, that they should be teaching me, but to effectively not teach the student because of what I would regard now as a ridiculous ban.
And did they? We've heard so many stories of being humiliated in front of one lad was made dress up as a girl, paraded around the different. You said the teacher announced to the entire class that you were a runt, and that you would end up sweeping the streets of Dublin.
Yeah, that was the second occasion, and of course I proved him wrong. That particular person, I followed him on Google. I know where he is, but. He was the most abusive person ever. He ran down one day. I was 2 minutes late. Mm-hmm. I didn't know my Julius Caesar. And he was ashen-faced as he approached me and slapping the face. But I did actually not punch him. I kind of pushed him back. And then he just smacked me again 3 or 4 times. grabbed me by the hair and pulled me up to the principal. But for some reason at 14, I said to him, look, there's 40 lads in the class. And anyway, what happened then, he didn't report me, but he didn't teach me either. So that was it. But it was just, look, and on reflection, it's 50, 60 years ago. What can I say now? But compared to some of the other stuff,
yeah, you can recall it for people. You're still alive. You're in great voice. You're obviously, insofar as I can judge by a voice, you're obviously in good fettle, a relatively young man. I don't want any names, any packed drill, but you said you know this guy on Google. If you met him on the street, what would you say to him?
Well, I don't have a capacity to be a physical person, but I would certainly
address it.
You know, I would certainly have words with them and say, you know, obviously you've gone on to a bigger and better career yourself, as I have done. And I hope that you regret the words you stated to me, because that could have damaged a weaker person.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, the words have stayed with you, John, because you were able to retell them clearly here today.
Oh, yeah. They're firmly etched.
Yeah.
In my head, you know. So that particular person, I watched his career because, and I've never, ever, ever, ever addressed him or gone near him. I wouldn't be that kind of a person. But I've watched his career grow and grow. But I mean, he was particularly, and he was a lay teacher, by the way. This fellow, the other ones were.
Well, I heard
they were behind the gown, you know.
John, one of the memes I was reading at the weekend. One listener met the nun who had left a scar on her face when she was a child.
Oh my God.
And she bumped into this now older nun, obviously. Mm-hmm. And she said, do you remember? She showed her the scar.
Yeah.
And she said, do you remember? You remember inflicting this? Oh, you must be getting me mixed up with somebody else.
Wow.
But our caller insists, our listener insisted. And said, no, it was you. You're still in your nun's garb. I know you're much older. But it was you who inflicted this scar on my face. And she said she could see the woman shrinking in front of her and going ashen face. And she just finished by saying to her, now you know what I felt as a six-year-old child when you bet me in school. And that was the end of it. And by the way, that was enough. That was enough, as you say. What was your phrase? A brilliant phrase you had a few minutes ago. I do not have the capacity for violence or for physical.
No, I don't.
Proud of that. Be proud of that. Be proud of that.
I have to let it go. But what really gets me, Joe, I suppose, and what you've done some wonderful work over the last couple of weeks, is this denial that's out there. You know that, and also the acceptance level that you know that parents were, you know. We're not. It was like the parish priest, it was a sergeant, it was all of this, it was a teacher. And in fact, you know, these people are still living in denial in most cases.
Yeah.
Most, some of them are dead, but there you go.
But
look at, I just told the stories are good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, John, onwards and continued good health. And thanks indeed. Thank you, John. Joe@rt.ie. Michael, good afternoon. You were asked to make, you're right, what age were you when you were working in this Saddlers?
I started at the age of 13, Joe.
So you were only a child. And then this Christian brother walked in one day. Well, by the way, what do you make? And just remind people, what do you make in a Saddler's?
Make head collars, bridles, martingales, anything but a Christian trade was concerned.
Yeah, and anything with letters, primarily leather, strong.
All leather, Joe, all leather. Everything was leather.
Strong hair leather. Okay, this Christian brother arrives in your workplace. What happened?
Just walked in, had a quick look around, probably just to see if there was anyone in the shop.
Yeah.
He pulled out this leather strap from underneath his coat or his uniform as it wore at the time.
Yeah.
And he just said to me, he said, you know what that is?
Yeah.
I said, I do, yeah. And he said, could you make something like that? I said, I could, yes. We can make something like that. And he said, would you be interested in making stuff? And I said, no. I took it upon myself to say no. My actual boss wasn't there at the time.
And did you know what he wanted it? You know, you knew what it was used for, to beat children.
I did, yeah. I know exactly what it was.
And by the way, what can you remember, what, just for people who haven't seen those letters, it was actually made of leather, wasn't it?
It was made out of leather, and leather, you can get leather at the time from 3.5 millimetres to 4 millimetres, or you could get
Okay.
4.5 to 5 millimeters.
Okay.
Different thicknesses. This was a strap jaw that was approximately, I would say, probably in length from his thumb, probably around 10 to 12 inches in length.
Okay.
About 1.75 to 2 inches wide, and it was just cut square on the very end, and the hand part of it,
yeah,
was pre-shaped like, as I would describe it, the handle of, yeah, a sword.
Okay, yeah, good picture.
And at the back of at the small finger, there was like an ankle shape, so it couldn't slip out of his hand.
And was it stitched? Was there stitching in it, Michael?
It was, the one I saw was double stitched all round, and in the middle of the fat part of the hand, the white part, there was another 2 or 3 rows of stitching on the inside of it. I was listening to a gentleman there last week that was on your radio, and he said that he was describing it, and he said it was flopping the whole lot. I'm not mistaken, but I think that weapon that man was describing actually was well and truly used. Because leather, when you stitch it, is quite firm.
Yeah. He was talking about the leather disintegrating because of the salt. Yeah.
You see, the more times you use leather or handle it, it's softer it gets.
And you handle it, but they were handling it as they swung backwards. Their feet sometimes would leave the floor as they hefted it down on the hand of a 5, 6, 7 year old. Imagine the size of a hand. Look at the size. I wish, in one sense, we had images, but we had the voice of a 5-year-old earlier on reminding us we were talking about a baby's hand. By the way, Michael, you were working at 13. Had you left school?
I had, yeah.
And how did you get on in school?
I was on summer holidays, Joe.
Yeah.
And I just went down and asked for a job for the summer.
Yeah.
And I never left. I stayed there.
And did you learn much in school before you left?
I'd say if I was still there, Joe, I wouldn't have learned much more. When I went into the shop, that's when I started learning.
Yeah.
Took everything in, totally enjoyed it, making the stuff, cutting the stuff out.
Right.
I got more experience inside there than I did in school.
Okay.
My education isn't the best, but I survived.
But you became a craftsperson, a craftsman.
I did, yes.
Well done.
Doing it for the past...
I tell you, a 13-year-old saying, 13-year-old on your own, and how long had you been working in the Saddlers before this Christian Brother landed in front of you?
I'd say probably around 2.5 to 3 years. It was a 5-year apprenticeship.
Okay. But what age were you when you started it?
13.
So you'd only just started your apprenticeship, that's my point. And you're able to stand up to this bully and say, no, I won't make these weapons.
Didn't happen straight away because I wouldn't be allowed in the shop, Joe.
On your own. Okay, so you're 2 years there, 2.5 years there. Well done.
Yeah, approximately.
You're still very brave, what a 15-year-old saying to this fella, no, I won't make a weapon to be used on children. By the way, did your boss ever find out?
I told my boss when he came back what I was asked to do, and he said, you're doing the right thing by putting him out the door. That's exactly his words.
Good boss, good lad, Michael. Well done.
But Joe, I remember the weapon. The reason why, it was nicely stitched in the whole lot.
Yeah.
But the one thing that caught my attention actually was, it wasn't beveled. The leather wasn't beveled at all. And when I said it wasn't beveled, the edges of the leather, the sharpness of the leather was still there.
The edge wasn't taken off at the way you
correct.
Would. Yes.
Yeah, correct.
Well spotted, Michael. By the way, did he want a particular colour to match his soutane?
Well, the one that he pulled out was black.
To match his garment.
Yeah.
Soutane and matching weapon available in the Christian Brothers when you signed up.
It was some weapon because the one he showed me was approximately about a 1/2 inch thick.
Yeah.
When both pieces of leather, or even 3 pieces of leather, were stitched together.
Okay, stay with us, Michael, because we have a caller on who wants to describe what he was hit with. Maybe you can help us explain what it was after this. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Listening to Joe for the last few days has triggered memories of the abuse I got in secondary school run by the Christian Brothers in the mid-60s. I got a bus to school. Every morning we'd be 10 minutes late as we had to walk from the stop. We'd be ridiculed and beaten by the same brother every day for 6 days, Monday to Saturday. He'd hit me across the face and call me the scum of the earth. I'd go into class with my face stinging in red. Each morning I'd sit in the top deck of that bus and pray that the bus would turn over on the road and I'd be killed on the bend. Once in class, I made a mistake in an essay. That same brother gave me such a beating, kicking me and hitting me with his fists, that I wished he would kill me. I had a watch. I put up my hand to protect myself. The watch came off with the blows and he stamped on it. My mother came in to me one day as I was studying in my bedroom and asked what was wrong. Initially I said nothing, but then I told her. She reached out and closed my book. She said, "You're not going back to school tomorrow." It was the greatest thing I was ever told in my life.
William, good afternoon. William, you had your teacher. Tell us about the letters your teacher had.
Our teacher had two letters, and at the time, a big show on RT was Liam O'Murricu's Traumagus Adrum.
Yeah, yeah.
Light and heavy.
Yeah.
So his two letters, he christened them Traum and Adrum.
Okay.
And if you were called to the top of the class, yeah, these letters were in a mahogany box that was fur-lined.
Okay.
It was like keeping them safe. And he gave you the choice then of Traum or Adrum. And he would just hammer you. Absolutely hammer you. But he took such pride in his two letters inside in his box.
They were kept in a fur-lined box.
A fur-lined mahogany box.
And by the way, okay, Traumagus Adrum, one light, one heavy. Was one easier as punishment?
That's the first time you got it, right, you would say, "I'll take the light one."
Yeah.
And then after that, you said you'd take the heavy one. But after you got the two of them for the first time, you always took the heavier one because he didn't seem to be able to swing his hand as fast with the heavier one.
Wow.
But he could hit you 15 to 20 times. I mean, like we had another teacher who would get the duster, get you to form a knuckle, and basically he'd keep knuckling you until your knuckles were bleeding.
Yeah.
But the best of them all was we had a principal in a Christian Brothers school who had a stick. It was a bamboo stick, and he called it parging.
Parging.
And he called it parging. But he made up a song to the words of, do you remember the Andy Stewart song, "There Was a Soldier, a Scottish Soldier"?
Yeah, of course, yeah, there was a soldier.
Well, he called it "There Was a Porgine," an Irish Porgine. So when you were called to the top of the class, while he was hitting you with Porgine, the entire class had to sing the song. And he took pleasure in that.
As a child was being beaten?
As a child, and that was in primary school, so we could have been 6 or 7 years of age.
Yeah.
I mean, like, well, I could probably name 50 teachers who abused us, physically hammered us, but they're the three who stand up in my mind.
Okay. Let me ask, just say there, will you? Michael, 51551 text. Michael, would it make a difference if the letter was thick or thin, Trum Agus Adrum? Would it make a difference in terms of the pain inflicted, insofar as you know, Michael?
Well, the narrower the letter, Joe, the more sting you got.
Ooh, the narrower the letter, the more sting.
The more of a sting you'd get, yeah. If the letter is fairly wide, then you're literally getting that kind of, like both hands slapping one another. But if the letter is narrower, then it's like getting hit with a rope. It would sting you. It actually cut you.
Okay, and a narrow piece of letter could cut you?
Yeah, could you?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's, whip or whatever.
Could you?
When you're talking.
Could break the skin, Joe.
Okay. Good to meet you, Mahogat. William, August, Michael, Michal. Maureen, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Sorry for holding you there, Maureen.
That's okay.
Left-handed and the torment you endured in school, tell us.
Well, Joe, it's unbelievable, to tell you the truth. And just listening to everybody that's gone on for the last week, I think it's the level of hatred that they had for us children, which is quite shocking nowadays for people to hear.
Yeah.
They actually absolutely hated us kids. And I often wonder why. Like, When I started school quite young. We lived near the school. I went to school in Connaught of Mercy, County Westmeath, I won't say where. And it was every single day you were slapped because I was left-handed and I had red hair. And by God, the nuns hated those two combinations. So you'd be called stupid, your hair would be pulled, and I was trying to get the pen out of my hand into my right hand. And she was always in front of you, she was always there. And she used to have a leather belt with keys on the end of that belt. Mm. And she would whack them keys into your fingers, my left hand, which my knuckles were always bleeding. And then one day she just took it too far. She kept bashing me in the head and the pain of it. And I got so confused because she kept saying, put the pen in the other hand, the pencil in the other hand. And I kept moving and moving. And then I felt this like hot, a sharp pain, and I put my hand up and there was blood everywhere and big panic then. And I was taken into the principal's office. Mm-hmm. And I was crying. And the next thing, the principal, I'll never forget it. To me, it looked like a big canister, like a paint container, but mm-hmm. it was a thing of sweets. It was full of little sweets.
Yeah.
And she took the lid off and she said, now you, Maureen, take two of these. And I took two sweets and I thought, wow, oh my God. And they were mopping my head and my hair was all... But I didn't care. I was after getting the sweets. I thought it was brilliant.
What age were you when you were beaten like that and blood drawn from the head for being left
hand? I think I was seven or eight, I think, because, you see, you had the same teacher for the same subjects. So they would really start on you when you got into maybe first, second or third class. That was it.
Yeah.
That and they had a thing about left-handed people.
Crazy.
And you're called, you're the devil's child and you're never any good. It's just constant. And like when I look back now as an adult, having had children and a grandchild, the fear in our little bodies, we were
crazy.
Just terrified. Right. How you could learn, I don't know.
And did they
you know what?
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead. Sure. Go ahead.
The doctor was called. There was a man called
okay.
from the next village, and he came, and I got stitches in my head. I still have the scar to this day. And the principal walked me home down to my mother. And she kept saying, now, you'll have to stop running around the school. You have to slow down now. And I was thinking, yeah. And I was afraid that, oh, God, I'm going to be in trouble. She said, I'll tell your mammy everything. Everything will be fine. And all this. So I got in home anyway, and she said, Maureen was running around school, slipped, fell, but she's okay now. And then she said to me, I want you now every Friday to stay back and help me tidy up the copies and keep the classroom clean, and I give you some more of them sweets. And I thought that was great. I thought, yeah, okay.
And then you met the nun years later.
I met her years later. My life changed when we went to secondary school. We got lay teachers in and they were fabulous. They were brilliant. And we just did great. But this one particular nun was still in the secondary school. So I met her years later at a school reunion. And I couldn't get over how tiny she looked. Mm. And I went up to her and she said, oh, who have I here? And I told her my name, mm-hmm. my full name. And she looked at me. I said, do you not remember me? And she said, I didn't have you. And I showed her my scar and I pulled up my hair. I had long mm-hmm. hair at the time, my fringe. I said, take a look at that. That's what you did to me okay. with your keys yes. and your viciousness. Well, Joe, I'll tell you, the colour drained out of her face and she nearly died. And I could see the fear in her eyes. And you know what? I felt great. And I said to her, now, I said, how do you feel? You're a bit scared.
Yeah.
I said, and that's how you made me feel every day for years as a child. Now, I won't say on air what I called her. There's F's and B's and a lot of C's went into my thing with her. And I walked away from her.
Okay.
But I want to tell you, Joe, I think you are doing a fantastic job.
It's
for listening to people. No, Joe, it's so important that these stories come out. So many people say, oh, we all got slapped in school. It didn't do you any harm. It did people loads and loads of harm.
Yeah.
But I want to say that a lot of us have got through it.
Yeah.
We've had great lives, and I've had a great life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't define me.
Yeah.
And thank God the kids now that are going to school love going to school.
And would you tell your grandchildren what you went through?
Actually, the only reason I got in touch with Liveline was, we were talking about this last week. I have one grandchild, 15. And we were talking about the stories, and he said, God, that's terrible what went on, isn't that shocking? Did anything like that ever happen to you, Nanny?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually showed him my scar, and I told him the story like I told you.
Good God.
And he looked at me, and he said, oh, Nanny, that is terrible. That's terrible that happened to you.
When you were younger than he was even today.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I said, you know what? He said, I think I'll ring Joe Duffy and tell him. He said, do, Nanny, do.
Yeah, well done. good advice and a powerful indictment and well said, Maureen, and extraordinarily well handled as well.
Thank you,
Maureen. Good to meet you, Margaret. 51551. Thank you. Thank you. A hundredfold. A hundredfold.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I went to a primary school in Kerry in the late 60s. In my first 4 years there, I was taught by a lay teacher who was a devil from hell. She beat small boys on a daily basis. They were what you call back then slow learners, nothing else. She destroyed their lives. Many finished up in the gutter and died young. One day, I couldn't pronounce an Irish word and she pulled me over my desk and up to the front of the class. She slapped me full force across the face, thumped me, kicked me. My God, I thought she was going to kill me. I was about 7 or 8 years old. I remember I cried for hours and had to hide in a field of rushes so I could compose myself before I was able to go home. My father had died around that time and I could not burden my mother with further bad news. After that, I went on to have a very good experience at school and college. But today, I think more and more often of the lives that were destroyed by her brutality and violence.
I had female teachers until fourth class, then moved up class to a male teacher. This was the class we were all warned about. One incident which caused me great embarrassment was getting my first period in his class. He laughed and mocked me in front of the others.
I was in fourth class primary school in the early 1960s. There was a boy who used to deliver the newspapers every morning around town. School started at 9 a.m, but this lad was nearly always late. His family were dirt poor, and he did his best delivering papers in all sorts of weather. Some days he would arrive soaking wet. However, he always had a smile on his face. He got the daylights beaten out of him every morning he was late by one teacher in particular. I'll never forget it.
Paddy is in the United States of America. Paddy, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Okay, and there's a bit of a delay, obviously, on the line. You were in High Baby, senior infants, Paddy. What happened?
That's right, yeah. So we had a lay teacher,
mm-hmm.
and she had a habit every now and then that she'd line up the class around the walls and we all had to hold out our hands for a slap. That could be for anything, you know, a kid dropped a pair of scissors or when you're cutting papers, things like that. Anyway, one day, myself and my neighbour, Charlie, ran out of the classroom and home through the streets to escape it. And the next day, my mother, she was horrified. She brought me up and demanded to see the mother superior. And yeah, they had a fairly intense conversation. And then the nun said, we'll stop those slappings. And she took me into the school and handed me over to her sort of second in command.
Mm-hmm.
And she took us into the classroom and she put two of those little desks, you know, the one person wooden desk we used to have, facing the class and made us sit in them. And then she put ribbons in our hair. Mine was red, Charlie's was gold, I remember. And then she kind of invited the class to jeer us for the rest of the day. And some of the kids were fairly brutal as well.
Mm-hmm.
But so compared to the horrors you've been hearing about, it's a very minor little incident. But you know, decades later, I still
do you remember, Paddy, how you felt as you were being jeered? I presume the idea of the ribbon is to say you're a little girl.
Yeah.
And she saw that as pejorative.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the kids didn't join in the jeering, I'm glad to say, but the few who did were, you know, and it was, you know, these are 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, so they didn't have much to say. So it was probably stuff like Nancy Boy and things like that. But, I thought it was a weird sort of psychological cruelty.
Yeah.
And the last little nuance of that was my father at the time worked for a ribbon company in Dublin. And he had actually supplied the ribbons to the school for the Sacred Heart and the May procession. So
for the little girls to wear.
And they had sort of posies that you'd carry. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember the exact details.
And what age were you, Paddy, can you remember? Senior, babe, senior infants. Four, five.
Senior infants. I was probably, I think I was six. Might have been five.
Okay, well, let's listen again to the voice of a five-year-old today. This is what a five-year-old sounds like.
When I was born, I got this crown. There used to be jewels on the gem and splitter. They all fell off. I can't remember that. That was when I was a baby. But now I'm 18.
Can you hear that voice, Paddy? That's the voice voice of a five-year-old today.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible. Babies, babies, babies. And
bizarre.
Yeah. Okay, Paddy, good to meet you. Paddy is in the United States of America. Andrew, sorry for holding you. You were 10 and you were in fifth class. What happened, Andrew?
That's right. A lay teacher, female.
Yeah.
I think she could only have been 5 foot tall. But there was a handful of us that she used to turn on fairly frequently. I don't have loads of memories of this. The last couple of weeks, I think, I've prompted a few. But the one that and the story I tell anecdotally, so it's kind of weird to tell it with any weight, I suppose. On one occasion, we used to sit around these round tables, as you did in junior schools.
Yeah.
So when the projector was on, you had to face the slides and you had to recount what the sentence was for that day. I would have my back to the projector. So you're twisted around in the chair with your arms on the back of the chair. She turned to me to see if I knew what the sentence was, which I didn't. Yeah. She grabbed me by the back of the neck and she said, "Look at the way he's sitting." I remember that. And pulled me straight down onto the ground. So I landed face first onto the ground. I don't know how I got up from that. I remember one of the guys standing up and saying, "Miss, you broke the chair," as he held the back of the plastic chair up in the air. And then I don't know what happened then, but I remember the final of it was to be grabbed by my arm and swung around her body like a wrestler backwards into the blackboard where you had that ledge with the chalk on it. Which caused me to be winded immediately, and I dropped to the ground and I couldn't catch my breath. I was asthmatic, and I thought, I'll just hold my breath until she stops beating on me. I don't remember what she was doing at that point, but that was the end of that. But I do remember faking an asthma attack a couple of times with that particular teacher during that 1 year.
Did you witness savagery?
Yeah, so there was two fellas, and again, she picked on the same number of us. There was two fellas who used to sit at the table closest to her, again, in a group. And one day they were kicking each other under the table. So she got them up, stood them in front of each other, and a bit like that lady having to slap her brother. She said to one of them, "You hit him," and he wouldn't do it. Said to the other fella, "You hit him," and obviously he wouldn't do it. And they were giggling about it because between nerves and just ridiculous, I suppose. And she grabs one of their arms and bounces it off the other fella's face pretty hard, took him by surprise, pulled him back into the middle, if you like, again, so he didn't get too far away, lifted his arm up and punched it off the other guy, until eventually she had the two of them punching each other and literally falling over desks as they tried to beat each other, as she watched on in some kind of glee. I don't know. I don't remember much. I do remember it was a mixed class. There was two girls, and again, I never saw them again, but I remember them vividly, and I know all these people's names, and I wouldn't remember anybody else's, but they were the two who just stood up crying. I don't remember anybody else crying looking at this, but there was two girls basically who would just stand up and just start crying. I don't know. I can't make any sense for it, as I say that.
It's the trauma of it, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. I was young in school. I was 10. So most people at that age would have been 11 in fifth class, but that doesn't make any difference.
That image you have of the two her pushing the two lads, smashing, then getting the two lads to fight, basically to fight with each other. Like you'd watch two dogs fighting, which is as you know is banned, and so today is what happened in the school that you were in and at that age, but it wasn't banned and it looked like it was actually facilitated by the department. It was facilitated by the state. Andrew, thanks indeed. I'm going to go to Dave and then I'm going to go to Jim. Dave, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
You refuse to cry.
Oh, be God, I did, yeah. Yeah, that's one thing I wouldn't do in front of them, no way. I remember the slapping him with the cane was a normal thing in those days. I'm going back over 60 years now. I'm 71 now almost. And I remember one day I missed the spelling. And anyway, O'Brien, come up here. Up I went. And you put the hand out. You didn't pull your hand back, Joe. You pull your hand back, he started again.
Yeah.
And so the hand stayed out. And I got six of the best. And you can imagine the sting and the swelling. And he looked at me, I'll never forget that look in his face. It's pure evil-like. And he took the other hand, and he said, I'll make sure this time you're going to cry. I got six on the other hand. I literally couldn't hold anything, couldn't feel anything, and I wouldn't. And I looked at him, and whatever look, I looked at him, and he looked at me. I think he must have known, Joe, that no matter what he was going to do to me, I was not going to cry. And I never did. I did after, but I didn't then.
And can you remember what was going through your little head, Dave, that I'm not going to cry? Now, we had a boy last week, around the same age as you were at the time. And as I say, it's hard for, when we're listening to voices of older men and women, it's hard for people to go back and keep reminding people we're talking about children, babies, young infants, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old boys and girls when they had this cruelty inflicted on. But we had one last week and... the teacher said to him, I am going to keep hitting you until you beg me to stop. You beg me to stop.
God.
And after 40 smacks on alternately in one hand, the other hand, the teacher was exhausted and gave up. But what was going through your little head that you say, no, I'm not going to cry?
Well, I just defying him. It's just I was going to defy him, a defiance that it was the last thing I do. I can't understand it. It was like just something came into my head. I'm not going to let this guy beat me. I was only a child, as you said, and he was exhausted. You're right. Actually, that's a fantastic description. When I say hit your jaw, I don't mean like just giving you a whack. I mean full force. And doing 12 of those on the trot now, I never got 40. But then I'd be called back again. He tried it on me so many times. And the guys in the class, outside the class, they used to ask to see my hands, the other kids in the class, because they thought they were made of leather. They used to say O'Brien's hands are made of leather. Yeah. And they weren't, of course. But it was, I just wouldn't do it, Joe. And I never did. I never gave in. But by God, the pain. You couldn't hold anything, obviously, for a long time after. And... you'd sit down and then next day, same again. And that was it for the smallest thing. I could never understand it. I hated school, Joe. I just hated it. I just wanted to not go, try and find a way not to go in. But sure, I had to. And that was it. And I wouldn't tell my mum. She'd it wouldn't have been fair on her, you know. So, yeah.
I am taken by so many... people who were remembering why they didn't tell their parents, and this is something we might forget as well these days. One, we might forget how young you all were, we all were, when we were being beaten, but also that our mothers had a lot more burdens in life than we have today in terms of money and poverty and food. I know it's very difficult, especially for working parents. It's very difficult for all parents, but if they can understand what I'm trying to say, your mother had a lot more burdens and a lot less resources. So you didn't want to, as we've heard so many times, I didn't want to go home and bring more worry home to my mother. But Dave, well said. And
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks
so much.
That's Dave.
And I'll just say before you go that, by the way, it gave me one thing, right? And to this day, if I ever see an injustice anywhere, it could be manager giving out to a waiter in public or whatever, I'll pull them aside.
Good man.
And I'll talk to them. And it just gives you that, you know, you kind of stand up for people who are being bullied or wrong has been done against them.
Well
so
done.
Well done.
Thanks indeed,
Thank you,
Dave.
Joe.
Thank you, Dave. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
When I was six, I was brought home to Ireland to be sent to a Catholic school. I was left-handed, which was my first sin, and I had an English accent, which was my second sin. And my final sin? Well, that was my name. I was told constantly I had a dirty, proddy name. I hadn't a clue what she meant. Most days I wet myself because I was told she couldn't understand me when I needed to go to the toilet. You see, I couldn't ask in Irish. I was hit, kicked, and had my hair pulled. I was made stand at the top of the class and the girls were told, this is what sin looks like, smells like, and sounds like. I'm 62 now and I've had kidney problems my entire life.
When I was in high infants, the nuns used to give us a hot cross bun and milk for our daily lunch. I was a fussy eater and I didn't like that food. So I used to hide the hot cross bun underneath my seat. She caught me doing that one day. And when everybody went back to class, she made me sit there and eat 6 or 7 hot cross buns. I kept throwing up, but she made me continue to eat them. I will never forget that moment. And I have never had a hot cross bun again, ever, from that day a half century ago.
Aside from beatings with a leather strap, a baton and a meter stick, I was punched in the face by a teacher for failing to pronounce an Irish verb correctly. A grown man thought it was normal to punch a child in the face. I was forced to wet myself in front of my class when I was 12. I repeatedly asked for permission to go to the bathroom and was refused every time with a smile until I couldn't do anything but wet myself. I developed a speech impediment in the back of all this, which I still carry to this day. They normalised bullying and violence for young men for generations. It wasn't just the religious who did this, as I had a lay teacher for part of my schooling.
I'll go to Katie. Katie, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, your story. You're in primary school, yeah?
I was in primary school during the 60s, and in second class, we had a nun. I don't know, in today's terms, maybe she had dementia or something, I don't know, but she was extremely violent.
Okay.
And she used to thump the novice in the centre of her back with the ruler, and she would screech at her that you're blind, deaf and dumb, as she called it. And this happened regularly, and the poor little novice would be crying, you know, and we were so shocked. And she used to always take her anger out on a couple of what I would call the poorer girls in the class by getting two rulers and getting them on their edge and hammering their knuckles. And one girl in particular, at certain periods, she just got it every day for nothing. And
The child got it every day for nothing.
At certain periods. And primary school was full of fear. For us girls, it really was. In third class, you had a name-calling teacher, you know. She either used your surname or she would address you as Buck Teeth, which is what I got. If you wore glasses, Specky Four Eyes, Granny, and the usual slappings.
This was
a lay teacher.
Calling children horrible nicknames.
Yes, you know, if you had anything at all that she could distinguish you by, it was never anything positive. And it was par for the course, you know.
Yeah,
I think the miracle was we all learned the Latin Mass in third class, you know, by heart. Mm-hmm. The things that we absorbed in spite of all this. And I was weak at arithmetic, and so I used to be brought up every day and made to sit on the duster box at the top of the class and just sit there until I redid my homework, which would still not have been correct because I didn't understand, and I developed a thing about it. But very bad I just felt stupid, you know. And then it went on, and in sixth class, we had a nun who caned very many of the class of us girls because we didn't learn an Irish poem. Srajna Balyahatlia in its entirety. She just caned us.
The streets of Dublin.
You know, like it was cracked. It was so negative. And the one thing that saved us was in seventh class, we got a very enlightened, newly professed young nun.
Okay.
Who was just, she was just a total, you know, she made us feel good, happy. We've never forgotten her. Anytime some of us girls who were in primary school come together, this is what is often talked about. Because it was a shocking thing. And, you know, I feel so sorry, especially for the little ones when we were in second class, in particular, watching that nun and the poor novice. And we did tell our parents, but nobody did anything. They thought they were making it up a bit. And it wasn't for another few years that the nun was removed, you know. So that's how it was.
And remind again how we're not talking about somebody striking you at your age now. We're talking of somebody striking people just beyond infanthood, as we heard, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Prepared for Holy Communion and all this, you know, throughout all that.
And anyone listening, if you have got the chance to look out, and if you see, when you see at this time, maybe children coming home from school, primary school children, that is the age we're talking about. That were being hammered. I have a list here. And I did it again over the weekend. I have a list. It's now up to 55 different weapons, different instruments that teachers use on children. On children. And it's just... it's shocking. I'll put it together. It's now one big scribble, an angry scribble on a page. But I'll put it together properly and put it up on Twitter or something. Just at least 55 different weapons. Where did? And by the way, this in a schoolroom. Where did they get the imagination to come up with such horrors? Such horrors at their hand.
They were at complete liberty because I think they believed in the idea of sin, and the concept of sin dominated everything and wrongdoing. You know, you got it in your religious teaching and that. And I think that they were dominated by that.
Yeah.
And they're like, you, in a way, this program has formed a really important catalogue. And I just think, Joe, you should go ahead and do the book or get the program together. It's of historical interest and it should be chronicled in a serious way.
Okay.
I think it is. I know when my daughter went to primary school, she liked it.
Yeah, of course.
She liked it. And she loved secondary school.
Yeah, yeah.
We have moved on, mostly, I think. I really traumatised. I don't use trauma easily. I don't use that, but I won't say it traumatised me, but it definitely diminished my self-confidence and that of my cousin who was in the same class, you know, all through primary school.
And
so that's my story.
Yeah, and it's we have moved on, but we have to keep moving on. We have to keep learning. There's more to be. Yeah. There's more, you know. Is the next battle? Our parents, apparently in Ireland, still parents are allowed to use reasonable chastisement. What's going on? Anyway, we're going into the whole thing then, and what's going on behind closed doors? Kathy.
But you know, can I just say sorry to cut across?
Okay.
Children come into this world in a state of innocence. I believe in primal innocence.
Yeah, yeah.
These are innocent creatures in our care. And I remember when my daughter first went to school, a few weeks after the incident in Dunblane happened in Scotland where children were murdered.
1995.
And I saw these little lambs, as I saw them, coming out of our local primary school. And I sort of wept to myself, you know. They are our precious future.
Yeah.
And the people they grow into are the people who are now running the country, the young people who run this country, you know. So we need to treasure them.
Hear, hear. And protect them. No. They are so vulnerable. Yeah. So vulnerable. Mm. Anyway, Kathy, thanks indeed. Really appreciate Kathy. Jim is next. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you make
thanks
the point.
Thanks to the Lifeline for raising this issue.
Well, it was our listeners who directed us by the force of their contribution, which is still continuing, I can tell you. You remember it clearly.
Oh, I remember it very clearly. Now, I think the thing to be said is many of the contributors, including today, talked about primary school. Mm-hmm. But my incident took place in secondary school. I went to CBS in the west of Ireland during the mid to late 1960s. I did my Leaving Cert in 1970.
Okay.
I was, I suppose, 17 years old at the time, so I was a young adult, obviously. And we had a lay teacher who taught commerce and Latin.
Okay.
Commerce, it was called in, I think, accountancy today.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had the habit of carrying a hazel stick in his back pocket, in his back trousers pocket. Now, I found commerce a bit of a grind. I found it dull. I still think it's dull today. I was drawn more to English and geography and history and art-style subjects. But I obviously had trouble one day with some concept in commerce. And however I came across for him, he decided that a blow across my face would help my understanding of the subject and clear up this particular concept. So with that, I got the flat of his hand right across the face. Now, I wasn't one used to getting corporal punishment, either in primary school or secondary school.
Okay.
But I still remember that blow to this day, and I'm 72 years of age now. I wish, there was a contributor, I think, last week, John, I think, from the west of Ireland as well. I seem to remember that he took on two of his tormentors and hit them or struck them or knocked them down or whatever. I wish I had the guts at the time to do that. But I sat down and, it was a David and Goliath struggle.
Of course,
and
yeah.
Goliath was going to win this one. So he came to me. The interesting thing is not so much the blow, because I was used to sports and all that, the physical blow wasn't so terrible. But the next day, at the very beginning of class, he came to me, came down the classroom, because I was sitting near the back, with the stick out, and pointed it at me, and in a very menacing tone, I can still hear him, he said, "Do you understand now?" Now, I had two choices there. And, well, had I any choice, really?
I had no choice.
So that was it.
Yeah. The menace.
The menace, yeah. Okay. I've just written down on a piece of paper here one word, and it's cropped up several times today, and I think last week as well, fear.
Yeah.
Fear was the overriding emotion right through school.
And to hear so many people say again and again and again, the sound I remember most from my primary school days was crying, not laughing in a school. Crying was the sound I remember most. Thanks indeed, Jim. Alexandra, good afternoon. You say being hit every day was normal.
Oh, yeah. That was perfectly normal. Every single day. Every day, hit. It wasn't until I was in, I think, sixth class, we had a lay teacher, and she was lovely, that I didn't get hit.
And what were the circumstances? You describe being put on top of a piano.
Yeah, I was listening to you last week, and I heard you doing your little long list, as it happens, of implements used to punish children. And I thought, I have to tell Joe this. When I was in junior infants, I was tiny, still am tiny, and the nun used to get me and sit me on top of the upright piano and call me Omadhon and get all the other children in the class to laugh at me and call me Omadhon.
And what
she liked to do.
Alexandra, what age were you when you were five?
Five.
Sorry, what five, age? Five. Okay. This is what you sounded like when you were five.
When I was born, I got this crown. There used to be jewels on the gem splitter. They all fell off. I can't remember that. That was when I was a baby. But now I'm 18.
That's the voice of a five-year-old today, Alexandra.
That brings a big smile to your face, doesn't it? So lovely.
The sweet innocence of it. Yes. But you're that five-year-old who's put up the piano, made wear a dunce's hat, and all the girls made laugh at you in the class.
Yes, she used to also put me in the bin in the corner.
In the waste paper bin.
In the waste paper bin. Well, it was a bigger one that I was listening to last week, because I fit into it from standing, whole body pushed into it. It was a bigger bin. And she used to push me, every bit of me, down, right down into my head. And I would be pushing against her, and she would tell me and push me in and tell me, you are nothing but a piece of rubbish. That's all you are. You're just rubbish. Yeah. I was dyslexic, Joe, I still am. And we would get our spellings on Friday, spelling exam. Now, this nun had a particular way. She used to cover up all of our little posters in the classroom with black material and make us kneel on the floor beside our desks, every one of us, to do our spelling test. This was least we copy off each other. And I couldn't spell at all. For me, it was like trying to learn off 10 phone numbers. I couldn't. I would try the night before, get in and it would be gone. So this particular day, I thought I'd be clever, and I wrote all of the spelling down on a tissue and put it in my sleeve. 5 years of age, you can imagine. Gently took the tissue out of my sleeve, thinking this was great. I wasn't going to be punished. Mm-hmm. And the poor girl beside me put the hand up, put the love up. Sister, sister, she's cheating. Wow. Well, my heart is actually thumping in my chest telling you this. So needless to say, she gave me six of the best on each hand and then sent me down the corridor on my knees to the head nun to explain also what I'd done.
On your knees?
On my knees, down the corridor. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Alexander.
So, Joe, that's it. That's all I can remember, really. Yeah. And to be honest, I'm getting a little bit upset.
Yeah.
And just remembering this. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it's still there for so many people.
Yeah.
But I think also from what the feedback I'm getting over the weekend is from people talking and sharing is helping in itself is helping.
Absolutely.
Thanks for helping, Alexandra. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I am a man of 67 years of age, and I have never cried since those days of hell until this week when I listened to my fellow sufferers who had the courage to speak to you and the nation about the hell, horror, humiliation, sexual abuse and not being listened to. I suffered every day of my primary and secondary school life, either being sexually or physically abused by both religious and lay teachers. Every day from the age of 4 until I eventually got the courage at 17 to tell a teacher, if he hit me once more, I will hit you back. Then it all just stopped and my life felt different. It was as if a part of my day was missing and I couldn't cope with normality. A Christian brother would soak his leather belt overnight in a basin of water at the top of the room and use it on us the next day. Another one had old pennies stitched into the top of his belt. With a closed fist, he would grab your shirt at the back of the collar and push you forward and then jerk you back. Some of us would spend the day kneeling on the floor facing the wall for the day, no toilet break or play in the yard. My younger brother, by 3 years, was in the same school and one day he soiled himself and he had bad diarrhea. I was sent to take him home and you remember, Joe, we all wore short trousers, so as you can imagine, it was all down his legs. My poor brother was horrified and very upset. He was an infant. I took him to the bathroom to clean him up before I took him home and then I got a beating because I didn't do what I was told. And that was, get that filthy animal out of this building. I had to walk my poor brother out of the school, and only for a lovely neighbour spotted us, she helped us out. I will never get over this. I carry this in my head every single day of my life. I cried listening to your show, and I am crying now and thinking of us all, poor innocent children who suffered in silence but still carry the scars and nightmares of what we suffered and accepted as a so-called normal life. Until this week, I have never told anyone, not even my wife, about what I suffered before. I was too ashamed.
And Hilary is listening. Hilary, good afternoon. You're a mum to an 8-year-old little girl, and you marvel, as you say, every morning as she's going out to school.
Yes, Joe. I emailed last week, and it is, since she started to go to school, I suppose I've been thinking about my own school days. And, you know, when we get together, my friends and I, we talk about senior infants in particular. And we had the nicest nun in junior infants. And, you know, we went to school in 1981 and with the loveliest nun in junior infants and then into senior infants. And of course, we weren't prepared for what was waiting for us there. And we had another nun, and I describe her as head to toe evil, you know.
Yeah.
She was a horror of a human. And, you know, she beat us regularly, but in particular, she had a fondness for beating the poorer children in the class. And there was another level to her. You know, she was warped. And like even her pets, as they were called, they were allowed to remove her little boots and put on her slippers. You know, even that is, you know, desperate. But we had to ask for toilet paper, and it was back in the day when you had that, it was like greaseproof paper, I recall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one sheet for a wee and two for a poo. And you got battered if you asked for two. And I remember vividly the day that one girl, she soiled herself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember that so clearly. And you know, we were babies, like we were five. And when I think of it now, I think of it regularly because I look at my own little girl skipping into school, and
happy.
I look
happy
at her innocence,
and
I go, God, we were that. And like she used to, when our moms would pick us up, like, you know, sometimes our ears were still red from, and she'd be putting down her hat and she'd be smiling away at us. You know, pretending she was a nice teacher. You know, it was horrendous. You know, and like I feel guilty even by saying this because like I didn't get battered as much as others. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I was lucky in that regard. But I think now I can recognise that even if you weren't getting battered, you were afraid of getting walloped.
It is
and
not,
you were afraid whatever she was going to do. She was awful.
And it is not, and I know you, it is not to compare one so-called level of punishment to another. It's they don't pale into insignificance beside. They add to our picture of what was going on in this country for a long, long time.
Sure.
And above all, the long-term effect it has had on so many people. Now, thankfully, so many people we've heard have, in one sense, they, at the age they're at now, they feel that talking about it publicly has helped. I remind people all the time of RTE.ie helplines. But in one sense, the catharsis and being able to talk about it now is in one way, without losing the run of ourselves, is helping people. But your image of your 8-year-old bouncing out to school happy, and at five, you say at five, we went into senior infant, and it was there I first understood fear and terror. At five,
without a doubt.
At five, and this is Hilary. This is your voice at five.
When I was born, I got this crowd. There used to be jewels on the gem and splitter. They all fell off. I can't remember that. That was when I was a baby. But now I'm 18.
I want to go to Mark before I finish. Thanks, Hilary. Mark, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Hi, how are you?
One day, you were a student of the 70s, and you say so-called brothers. Yeah, you even used that phrase, brothers. They were called brothers.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's funny just listening to everybody talking there. I mean, I think, first of all, I have to say this is what public service broadcasting is all about. Mm-hmm. And it's great that you're revealing all these stories. My recollection is really not a story about myself, but another guy, a kind of a gentle guy in the class, who for some reason, I can't remember, was called up to the brother, the so-called brother, and he had glasses, and the brother removed his glasses, and as he was lifting his fist up from the desk, he punched this guy and he went about 10 feet down between the desks, and then he handed him back his glasses and he said, I never hit a fellow with glasses. And I remember somebody mentioned it earlier there, the fear, your mouth was dry, you know, with the fear in the classroom. And I had come from school in England and I'd never experienced anything like this. And I remember saying it to my dad and he said, Oh, you must have deserved it, you know, because obviously I got a few beatings myself along the way. So, yeah, awful stuff.
That image, what an image. I never hit a fella with glasses, took off his glasses, took off a child's glasses, a boy's glasses, and this adult and punched him full force, sending him 10 feet. Mark, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And also thank you to Tommy O'Sullivan, our sound operator, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Tara Lockery-Grant, series producer Annette Egan, and to that voice of that gorgeous five-year-old child that flowed throughout the programme so joyously, counterpointed with what the memories of so many people are at 5 years of age. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.